Well, good morning. Today we're going to discuss the last two characters in our Proverbs series, the seductor and the committed. And when I just say that, let me just remind you again, PG message, nothing graphic, but we are talking about seduction. Some of you may think, well, that's a real big issue in our culture today. Okay, big, huge issue in our culture today. But what's interesting is in the book of Proverbs, 31 chapters, Solomon devotes three whole chapters to this discussion. So 10% of the book of Proverbs deals with this issue. Do you think that Solomon had a problem with this particular issue? Okay? So it's not something new. It's from the Garden of Eden forward, there's been something related to the issue of sex and how we handle ourselves, and this touches every aspect of every person's life, okay? So as we talk about it today, here's what I'm going to ask you for. As we go through this today, you're going to have a personal reaction to it. Some of you are going to say, you know, I'm really hoping that you really get the Puritan idea across here because that's where I'm coming from. And some of you may think, I don't know why everybody makes such a big deal about this in church because I'm kind of on the other side of that, on the more promiscuous side. Some of you are going to say, man, I've been scarred so deeply by this, and it just hurts to talk about it for me because it just hurts. It's a sad, hard part of my life. And some of you are going to say, I feel like this is kind of a trap or a place where I'm stuck or a place where I'm caught. And so, like, I don't want to hear about this because it's hard. Some of you may say, well, I really haven't made up my mind yet about this. I don't know. Here's what I would ask you to do. Today, we're going to walk through a biblical understanding of sex. Like, why God created it? What does it mean? How's it supposed to happen? Like, what does all that look like? What's the purpose of it? So if you would say, I may completely disagree with the Bible, but at least I want to understand, like, there's so much out there about what the church does or doesn't think. At least I want to understand what the Bible has to say. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I would challenge you to hang in here all the way to the end, even if what we talk about is something that's different than what you embrace, because that will give you a clear understanding of God's plan for this very, very significant and important subject. So let me start off. I'm going to give a biblical theology, and then next week I'm going to come back and I'm going to deal with some of the specifics. Some people would say, well, you know, what about young adults? You're not going to get married till you're 30, 32, 33, 34. What do we do? What about married people? How does it fit into our relationship? Or, you know, maybe I'm a teenager and I'm not sure exactly how to kind of think about this. Or I'm going to talk about that next week. I'll go into actual specific categories of people. We'll talk about that because it's just such an important topic. So today, a biblical theology. So let me give you a biblical overview, okay? When we start off with an understanding of the author of sex, it begins to give us some insight into the meaning and purpose of sex. Now, here's what I want you to think about. Who came up with the idea of sex? Was it Hugh Hefner? Was it Lady Gaga? Like, who came up with this idea? Dr. Ruth? Oprah? Like, where did it come from in the first place? Now, here's the really weird thing. You know, from time to time, I'll ponder things, and it's just kind of weird. Like, when you think about sex, okay, why in the world would God decide to do it this way? Like, create the body parts the way he created them, create the genders, create the nerve endings, create the adrenaline and the physiological connection. I mean, why would God do this? Like, isn't that interesting? Of all the ways that God could have created a way for life to be formed and for the next generation to come about, why make this? Okay? When you begin to ask that question, now you're traveling down a path that will lead you to an understanding of the purpose of sex and what it's for, okay? So, as we look at wisdom, the first principle that we get from Scripture is this. God created sex to be powerful and purposeful. Okay, God created sex to be powerful and purposeful. Let's start with the powerful word. If you'll take your Bibles and just turn to Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30, okay? In the sayings of Agur, we looked at some of these in the past, but in the sayings of Agur that Solomon recorded and put in here, he does these number things, got 1, 2, 3, 4, in order to kind of get us to the main point he's trying to make. And there's a lot of verses I could use. I'm just going to use a couple this morning in this particular area. But it says, Agur's saying in verse 18, there are three things that are too amazing for me, four that I do not understand. These are mind-boggling, mysterious, unbelievably powerful things. He says, the first one is the way of an eagle in the sky. The way of an eagle in the sky. What's he talking about? He's talking about aerodynamics. He's talking about lift and thrust and drag and propulsion. All of those things that go into somebody being able to fly. That's an amazing thing because we're used to things falling, right? That's mind-boggling how that works. It's a powerful thing to be able to grasp and tap into how that works. Second, he says, the way of a snake on a rock. Flat belly, flat surface, no legs, and yet a snake can slither across the rock because there's something going on there. What is that? Well, we know it to be friction. We understand that. There's a powerful principle working in this whole process. Look at the third one. The way of a ship on the high sea. Most of the time we think about when you put something in water, what does it do? It tends to sink, and then you put a lot of weight in it, like you take a boat. You know, wood floats, but not when you load it down. But when you think about the properties of buoyancy and water tension and water displacement and all of these principles that got hardwired into the world, these are powerful things. And then he ends with the one he's really pointing us toward, the last one. He says, the way of a man with a maiden. The way of a man with a maiden. Here's what he's saying. There's something powerful that works between a man and a woman. It's an incredibly powerful thing. So the idea of intimacy, romantic love, physical sexual love, that is a mind-blowing, overwhelming, powerful force. And if it wasn't, we wouldn't have every song be about it, every movie be about it, every TV show be about it, all the designer clothes be about it, every conversation that seems to take place in our world today seems to wrap around that. And the power of this is just an amazing thing. The history is filled with the songs and the poems of this. Empires have risen and fallen with the likes of Helen of Troy and Cleopatra. I mean, this is an incredibly powerful force. So God created it to be powerful. God also created it to be purposeful. In other words, he had a reason behind it. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, a passage that everybody that's been to a wedding knows. When God creates Adam and Eve and he brings them together, puts them in a permanent union as husband and wife, what does it say? It says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and shall what? Cleave, form an inseparable bond, which the physical act of sex pictures. And the two will become what? They become one. They become one flesh. They're connected together. Now, what Scripture's teaching us here is that God has given a powerful commodity, sex, to take a man and a woman and cement them together in a permanent relationship that will last forever. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And it is designed to create the kind of bond between men and women that will stick them, make them unique, make them one, give them one flesh, cause there to be an inseparable bond. So what happens if that powerful force is used in a different way? You see, often I'll refer to sex as human glue or human cement that God put as a gift to us to cement two people together in union forever. something unique, something special between them that only they can share. What happens if it's used in the wrong way? Here's what the power aspect of it does. Oftentimes, it has the tendency to cement us to the wrong person. Like we get into a relationship, and all of a sudden we're connected to somebody that we're not committed to. And in that connection where there's no commitment, there's all kinds of emotional heartbreak. You know, I've seen so much of this, folks. I wish I could just go into story after story. I can't, because there's too many people that, like, I know them, they know me. And I just can't do this. But let me just tell you this. Almost every conversation where my kids, who are teenagers and young adults, come and tell me about a girlfriend or a boyfriend that are having problems in a breakup or having problems in a relationship, in almost every one of those situations, almost exclusively everyone, I'll ask my kids, are they sleeping together? 9 times out of 10, that's going on. People don't understand it because they don't understand that this is powerful. They don't understand it because they don't understand that this was powerfully given to cement two people together. So what happens when you cement yourself to someone that you're not committed to? It creates all kinds of issues. I mean, this week, if I could share with you the heartbreaking stories that I've just come in contact with from the people that are closest to me, I mean, I got to tell you guys, I was sad all week just thinking about this idea. It cements you to the people you're not supposed to be cemented to. Here's the other thing that happens. What happens when you take an adhesive and you stick it, you rip it off, you stick it again, you rip it off, you stick it again, you rip it off, what begins to happen? It begins to lose its adhesive property, right? Ladies, because you guys get this intuitively and you're smarter than the guys, you go home, take a piece of masking tape, stick it on your arm, rip it off. Stick it on your arm again, rip it off. Stick it on your arm again, rip it off. After a while, I mean, you'll begin to understand what's going on here. Guys, it may take a little longer to set in, so you guys go home, take some duct tape. You stick that on your arm and pull it off. Stick that on your arm and pull it off. The first thing you'll notice is the first time it gets ripped off, it hurts like crazy. That's what happens. You stick yourself to another person in this incredible gift that God has designed, and then you rip it off, and it hurts like crazy. But you know what happens over time? If you misuse it, and you spread it out, multiple partners over multiple periods of time, and I would include pornography in that, folks. Multiple, you know what begins to happen? It begins to lose its connective properties. Begins to break down. It's not as significant anymore. It doesn't have the same bonding effect, which raises a lot of issues for people who are thinking, well, you know, when I get to be 32 or 33, I want to settle down with somebody, but between now and then, I'm going to have a lot of fun with a lot of different people. Folks, at 32 or 33, when you decide now it's time for this to become special, you will find out that you've lost the power that God has placed within this incredible gift. Does God like sex? You better believe it. Does God warn us about the dangers of misusing it? Yes, he does. Why? Because he's mean and restrictive? No, because it's for our own good. See, we've been studying the book of Proverbs. We come to understand that God wired the world with wisdom. In other words, he designed it in a certain way. He had a plan for it. In the same way that gravity works in the world, that economics have been designed by God, that relationships have been designed by God, sex has also been designed by God. He's got a plan for it, for your good, for your good. So what you do with it is huge. So having said that, the Bible goes on to talk about that this idea that God's come up with, he designed sex, when we do it within God's plan, it results in blessing for the people involved. It not only blesses the two people that make a commitment to this, but it also blesses their children. And it also blesses society as a whole. I don't have time to unpackage that this morning, but I want to point out two other kind of biblical ideas to you. The first one, let's talk about this. When sex is actually taking place in the Old Testament, there's two terms that are used for it. The first one is the term to know. The second one is the term to lie with. One of them is to know, the other one is to lie with, and that gives us a lot of insight into the understanding of what sex is supposed to be. The term to know is used as a euphemism of sex and points to the idea of intimacy. Points to the idea of intimacy. It points to the idea of permanence. In other words, the word to know is a word that's very significant because it means not only do I know who the person is, but I have an intimate personal relationship. I have personal experiential knowledge. Now, within that relationship, to know another person that's connected to intimacy, the issue of sex is for mutual satisfaction. It's for mutual satisfaction. In other words, in that kind of an intimate relationship where two people have come together for a permanent bond because getting intimate with that person, knowing that person, being known by that person is the ultimate goal. That's what I'm all about. It creates a sense of mutual satisfaction. Okay? A senior in high school, a young blonde, says it this way. She says, when we date, we start giving gifts like flowers and candy. When we become engaged, we give special things, a diamond, and very personal things. The most precious gift that I can ever give is myself. I have nothing more precious to give. When I marry, I want to give my husband the best that I have, my whole self as completely as I can. Giving him something that nobody else has ever had and nobody else ever will communicates. I want to be intimate with you. I want to know you. You and I will have something together that no other human being will ever share with us. Intimacy. That's the concept of to know. There's another word that's used for the sexual act in the Bible, in the Old Testament, and it's called to lie with. And when two people lie together, the issue is not intimacy, the issue is selfishness. It's about what I'm going to get. So I'm not lying with you because I'm trying to know you. I'm lying with you because I'm into the experience. The word to lie with implies that personal gratification is the ultimate goal here. Not mutual satisfaction, but I'm into this for what I can get out of it. So it's personal gratification. This is about me having an incredible experience. Now, that personal gratification may not just simply be physical. It may be emotional, too. Lots of people get involved in sex because they want to feel close to somebody. They want somebody to like them or believe they're pretty or to believe they're masculine or any number of reasons. But the focus is short-term. Personal gratification, that's what I'm into. One of them is intimacy. One of them is personal gratification. Now, this past week, NPR actually did an article, and here's the title of the article. So let's take it. Let me close the Bible for a second for those of you guys who are thinking this is just what the Bible says. Let me close it for a second. This is what our culture says, okay, NPR. The top of the article says, sex without intimacy. Okay, that's not my interpretation. This is their interpretation of what's taking place in the culture today. So it's this one over here. People are into sex for lying with each other. It goes on to say, no dating, no relationship. So that's the title of the NPR article from this week. And here's what it says. Young people, during one of the most sexually active periods of their lives, aren't necessarily looking for a mate. What used to be mate-seeking ritual has shifted to hookups, sexual encounters with no strings attached. The idea used to be you were going to date someone that is going to lead to something sexual happening, Bogle says, the art researcher. In the hookup arena, something sexual happens, even though it may be less than sexual intercourse, that may or may not ever lead to dating. So that's lie with, may actually never even lead to a relationship. separating the physical from the emotional, separating intimacy, knowing someone, growing close to them, to simply the physical gratification experience. Going out on a date is sort of ironic, obsolete type of thing, says 25-year-old Elizabeth Welch, who graduated from college in 2005 and now lives in Boston. She says, among her friends, dating is a joke. Going out on a date to dinner and a movie, it's so cliche. Isn't that funny? Now, that may be true, but ostensibly what happens when two people go out together? They're spending time with each other, right? They're conversing with each other. They're sharing with each other. They're getting to know each other. What are they doing? They're building a relationship. Avery Leakey, 25, knows what this is from the other side. He's in a relationship now, but he says that in general, most of the young women he used to meet, quote, just wanted sex. They're independent, unquote. Being in a relationship was not important to them, especially if it interfered with their careers or their pursuit of advanced degrees, he said. And he goes on to talk about how expensive it is to take people out. What's the point? This article is just pointing out. The trend in our culture today is to use sex for personal gratification and not connect it to relationships. One more little thing here. Wilkerson's talking about the internet and text messaging and so forth. He says, what that means is that you have connected with many, many more people, but each of those relationships takes a little bit less of your life. That fragmentation of the social world creates a lot of loneliness. So isn't it interesting? God designed sex for intimacy, personal knowledge, connecting. The way it's being used today, along with just the culture of social media, networking, means that people are having a lot of it, but it doesn't mean much to anybody. And you know what? In the process of that, there's an overwhelming, greater feeling of isolation and loneliness. For those of you who feel like, man, I'm left out. Like, sounds like everybody's hooking up and I'm not. A compilation of most of the surveys today say that there is a staunch 28% of the population in college today that have committed to purity, that have committed to remain virgins and will succeed at that, So there is a pretty significant chunk, about 28%, who understand, I'm not going to go that path. This is where I'm at and this is where I'm going. So, having said all that, I just want you to see it played out because this is what it looks like in the minds of the people in our culture today. Let's watch a little bit of Nelly in a song called Promiscuous Girl.
How you doing, young lady? The feeling that you're giving really drives me crazy. You don't have a play about the choke. I was at a loss for words first time that we spoke.
You're looking for a girl that'll treat you right. You're looking for in the daytime with a light.
You might be the type if I play my cards right. I'll find out by the end of the night. All I can do is try, give me one chance. What's the problem? I don't see the ring on your hand. Promiscuous girl, whatever you are, I'm all alone. And it's you that I'm on.
But you're still kinda cute. I'm a big girl, I can handle myself. But if I get lonely, I'ma need your help. Pay attention to me, I don't talk for my health.
I want you on my team.
So does everybody else.
Baby, we can keep it on the low. Let your guard down, ain't nobody got it on. If you were the girl, I know a place we can go.
What kind of girl do you take me for?
Promiscuous girl, whatever you are.
It's kind of a catchy tune, isn't it? Kind of makes you want to dance a little bit. I don't know if you guys caught it, but there's one phrase in there that just stands out at me in this whole discussion. And you have to ask yourself this question. Like, if I decide that going God's way is not what I want to do, what are the unintended consequences of that? She says, roses are red, some diamonds are blue, chivalry's what? It's dead. But you're kind of Some of you guys have heard this song before. Chivalry's dead, but you're kind of cute. What happens in a culture where the best you can expect is to go to bed with someone who's moderately attractive, and that is the world of love and romance and meaning and fairy tales and forever after. You see, folks, rather than people being mad at God for his design of sex, why are we not kicking ourselves? Why are we not kicking ourselves? What are we thinking? Taking something that people dream about as precious and bringing it down to, you're kind of cute, I guess you'll do. That's where we're at as a culture. Now, as we wrestle with this, I want to take a moment just to walk through Proverbs chapter 7. We're going to look at this chapter together, and as we look at this chapter together, I want you to see the kind of the anatomy of how this works, the anatomy of how this works. So as we look at the whole idea of being seduced, and the committed person is the one who's committed their sexuality to God's plan, and they live according to that. The seducer is the one who is into it for their own personal gratification. Look at verse 1 of chapter 7. It says, my son, keep my words and store up my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and you will live. Guard my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your kinsman. They will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words. Okay? Now, some of you might object and say, why is the woman pictured as the seductress here? Okay? Great question. Let me just say that in the book of Proverbs, this is a book of poetry, okay? In the book of Proverbs, wisdom is pictured as a woman, okay? So true wisdom is pictured as this incredibly powerful, beautiful woman. But the opposite, the evil sister, so to speak, of wisdom is seduction. It's folly. So this is not a specific slam on women because men seduce women all the time. This is just a picture of what it looks like, okay? So this is not a kind of a hit on women. This is just using that to picture it to show the ugliness in contrast to the beauty of wisdom. So here's what happens. He says, at the window of my house, usually the second floor, they didn't have windows on the first floor because kept the robberies down. So he's probably on the second floor. He's looking out through his house. I looked out through the lattice. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who lacked judgment. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home, now in the streets, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. Couple thoughts here. First of all, aimless wandering will kill you. Aimless wandering is the beginning of being seduced. This guy's looking out through the window, and he says, I see a youth, a simple guy, person that's naive, and he's meandering along, not paying attention to where he's going, and he's heading down the path in her direction. What chance does he have of surviving the sophisticated allure of the sexual pull in his world when he is aimlessly wandering? And here's what I would say, men and women, if we don't have a commitment to embrace God's view for how our bodies are used for his glory, and we don't have a clear understanding of the role of temptation and the dangers that are lurking out there, and we don't understand that we have to stay off of certain streets, avoid certain paths, don't go certain places, don't cross certain lines. If we don't get that and we don't have a commitment to that, that's the first step in being set up. When you start thinking, well, I can go kind of wander where I want to, I have freedom, you're in a bad spot. You're in a dangerous spot. The second thing this passage is telling us is, like, she's everywhere. In fact, that's what he says. She's loud and defiant, verse 11. Her feet never stay at home, now in the streets, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. Seduction's everywhere. There are opportunities for that in every place you go. And so you have to not wander aimlessly. Okay, watch how she approaches him. In verse 12, verse 13, it says, she took hold of him and kissed him. And with a brazen face, she said, here we see a sensual connection. A sensual connection. The anatomy of seduction will involve some kind of a sensual connection. She grabs a hold of him, close physical proximity. She pulls him in. She gives him a kiss. So there's some kind of an arousal of the senses. So you start feeling in any kind of relationship or any kind of setting that there's something in you that's beginning to feel a sensual pull toward another person. That's a dangerous place. You're on the path. You're in trouble. The third one we see in verse 14. She says to him, I have peace offerings at home. Today I've fulfilled my vows. What's she talking about here? She's talking about justification. She's saying, listen, you know, I went to the temple. I had a period of time when I was fasting. I went to the temple, offered a sacrifice. I bring home the rest of it. I've got a meal at home. It would be a shame to waste this. Besides, I'm a religious person. This is justification. I need you. Somebody starts telling you that I need you. I need you in my life. I need you to listen to me. I need you to talk to me. I've got an issue. I need you to celebrate with me. And it's an inappropriate relationship. Be prepared. That is a danger moving in the direction of seduction. And then verse 15 is the best. So I came to you, out to meet you. I looked for you and I have found you. Now, is that true? He just happened to be wandering down the street, but he ran into her and she says to him, you are the man of my dreams. Notice the word you is used three times in there to emphasize, hey, it's you, baby. You, you're the man. You're the one. What's going on there? There's an ego thing going on there. She's flattering his ego. She's flattering his ego. Hey ladies, when somebody that you know that slept with everybody on the block says to you, yeah, but I've now found the woman of my dreams, be assured that he probably said that to the last woman. And the one before that, and the one before that. You've got to watch out. Being stroked, having your ego stroked, is not a predictor of whether you're going to be loved or not. In fact, sometimes it masks true intimacy. Watch out for that ego thing. And then, look at the next one, verse 16. She says, I've covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloe, cinnamon. Come, let us drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. What she's saying, she's idealizing the pleasure. She's saying, it's going to be so different than it's ever been before. With me in this setting, I've got it all arranged perfectly, and we're going to drink. We're going to get intoxicated on love. It's going to be the best you've ever experienced. And that's one of the dangers, to begin to believe that somehow this act is going to be different and better than all the other ones before. It's only better if it's the way God wants it to be. And then finally, there's this minimizing of the risk. She says, my husband is not home. He's gone on a long journey. He took a purse filled with money and will not be home until the full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once, he followed her like an ox going to slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing that it will cost him his life. Miami Herald, one summer, reported on a homicide. Judith Bucknell, homicide number 106 that year. She was killed on a steamy June 9th evening, age 38, weight 109 pounds, stabbed 7 times, strangled. She kept a diary. Had she not kept this diary, perhaps the memory of her would have been buried with her body. But the diary exists, a painful epitaph to a lonely life. The correspondent made this comment about her writing. Quote, in her diaries, Judy created a character and a voice. The character is herself, wistful, struggling, weary, and the voice is yearning. Judith Bucknell has failed to connect. Age 38, many lovers, much love offered, none returned. Successful as a secretary, but a loser at love, her diary is replete with entries such as the following, quote, "Where are the men with the flowers and champagne and music? Where are the men who call and ask for a genuine, actual date? Where are the men who would like to share more than my bed, my booze, my food? I would like to have in my life, just once before I pass through my life, the kind of sexual relationship which is part of a loving relationship." She never did. Judy was not a prostitute. She was not on drugs or on welfare. She never went to jail. She was not a social outcast. She was respectable. She jogged. She hosted parties. She wore designer clothes and had an apartment that overlooked a bay. And she was very lonely. Quote, "I see people together and I'm so jealous I want to throw up. What about me? What about me?" Though she had many lovers, 59 in 56 months, she had little love. Who is going to love Judy Bucknell? The diary continues, "I feel so old, unloved, unwanted, abandoned, used up. I want to cry and sleep forever." Kind of hard to hear, isn't it? She just decided to do what so many in our culture would advise her to do, and when it didn't work, she just put it on steroids, thinking, if I give myself, if I give myself, if I give myself, if I give myself, then somebody will give back to me. And what she found out is when you give yourself and give yourself and give yourself and give yourself in a non-committed relationship, doing it different than the way God did it, something's going to break. Now, I don't have a lot of time this morning to talk about what breaks. And so next week we're going to talk a little bit about how this impacts different people in different groups. But I want to finish up today with just giving some advice that Solomon gave about how we protect ourselves from falling into this. And Solomon really gives us three words of advice today, very important for us to get. Notice in verse 24, he says, "Now then, my son, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray to her paths. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng." Boy, we know that. Just look at the media every day. "Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death." The first thing Solomon tells us in verse 25 is, do not let your heart turn to her ways. In other words, we are to guard our hearts. Guard our hearts. Now, we looked at that in chapter 4, verse 23, and came to the understanding that the heart in the Old Testament is really our inner life. It's not just our feelings, but it's also the things we think about, the things that we ponder, our aspirations, our daydreams, and the things that we decide to do. We've got to guard what's going on inside of us, because if we give in to thoughts or feelings or begin to make decisions that move us in this direction, we're going to succumb to the seduction of sex. We'll fall into this pattern. Look back at chapter 6, starting in verse 25. Challenging his son, here's what Solomon says in verse 25. He says, "Do not lust in your heart after her, or let her captivate you with her eyes." In other words, don't lust in your heart. Don't spend time thinking, meditating, going over in your mind what it would be like to be involved in a sensual relationship with another person, with a stranger, with anybody. You let yourself do that, guys, and it's going to draw you in. Don't do that. He says in verse 26, "For the prostitute reduces you to a loaf of bread." Isn't that interesting? "The adulterer preys upon your very life." Now, verse 27, "Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched?" Can you get away with that? You can't play with fire and not get burned. We need to guard our hearts. Guys, for the men, let me just say, one of the great things that's coming up is on September 8th for our normal Journeyman Bible study. We're going to be studying the topic of every man's battle. I would challenge you guys, all you guys, to come and be part of that. It meets on Wednesday morning. You can sign up for it online. Bring your teenage sons. Great opportunity for us to tackle this issue of how do you guard your heart from temptation. Second thing that Solomon says here in this passage is Verse 25, do not let your heart turn to her or stray into her path. So straying into her path, this physical proximity, what we're talking about here is guard your body. Guard your body. So you're asking yourself the question, what signals am I sending off? Either flattery or flirtation, what am I doing that will create an opportunity or situation? When I was in seminary, I worked on a crew that was putting up office panels in downtown Dallas. And I had another guy, a buddy on the crew that we worked together, and he was just an absolute flirt. So every time we went into these offices, we'd meet, run into many, many administrators, and he would flirt with every one of them. So that's the way we kind of got treated well and so forth. He'd just flirt. And so, you know, I kind of thought it was kind of cool because we always got what we wanted as far as, you know, privileges to set things up, times and so forth. And I remember one Friday afternoon, we walked out of the warehouse, and two girls from one of the offices where he was flirting heavily pulled up in the parking lot, opened up their trunk, opened up a cooler full of alcohol, and said, "We're going to Houston this weekend, and we thought you two guys would want to come with us." I thought we were just having fun. Those girls thought we were trying to communicate something to them. Now, you guys are wondering if we went to Houston. And some of you are wondering if we had a beer. It was at that moment, like, Mike and I looked at each other, made a commitment, like, no more. Like, you can't flirt with these girls anymore, Mike. You just can't do this. Look what you've done. Look what you've set up here. So guard your body. Like, what signals are you sending out? What are you communicating to people? How are you opening up doors for conversations to take place? What proximity do you have to people and to temptation? You need to guard your body. You need to guard your body. And then finally, guard your future. Guard your future. Look at verse 26. He says, "Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death." When I think of that verse, I think of the ghost of Christmas past standing there with Ebenezer Scrooge, showing him the end game and saying, "Do you want to end up here?" Only in this case, it's not the ghost of Christmas past, it's the ghost of pleasures past. Very few people recognize the significance of what they're doing with this very powerful thing that God's placed in all of our hands. Let me just wrap up with a story. I got a daughter that's 22, graduated from college, headed to grad school, and she got invited by a friend to come to a party where this friend's boyfriend had a friend there that she wanted them to get to know, thinking that they would have a good relationship. And so she was in another city, went to the party. They're talking at the party. They're talking about international travel. This guy's going on to grad school, so he's starting his grad school. It was an intellectual conversation. They're having a great time. And my daughter's thinking, you know, maybe this would be a guy that I'd go out with. You know, he's nice. He's cute. He's intellectual. He's going someplace. So they're having this conversation. And then, in the middle of all that, he leans over and he kisses her. And she goes, whoa, what's this all about? Like, are you trying to communicate? Like, she up front verbally, like, "Are you trying to communicate to me that you're, like, romantically interested in me? Like, you want us to, like, do things together?" And he said, "Well, let me just tell you where I'm at. He said, "If you're thinking that I would take you out on a date ever, you're completely wrong. Like, I'm not looking for somebody to date. Where I'm at in my life, I'm looking for a hookup. And I think you're really hot," and said some other things. "And if you would be willing, I would love that. But if you want more than that, like hanging out together, going out together, I'm not interested in that." Like, just the emotional reality of somebody being that verbal has her on the phone talking to us, and she says to us, "It is so wrong what these boys are doing. They're out sleeping with all of these girls, but in their mind, there's going to come a time when In fact, he even verbalized it. There's going to come a time when I graduate and get my job going, and at that point in time, I want to marry a girl. I want to settle down, raise kids. I'm into a family. And she says, they're out living this kind of behavior, and there's no consequences for them. They're going to do this to all these people, and then they're going to have their own little good life, and there's no consequences to them. And I said, oh, Kate, you are so wrong. You are so wrong. The consequences of that kind of behavior reverberate through a person's life. And when he finds out that his new wife is not as exciting as all these other escapades, where does he go? Affairs? Prostitution? Pornography? When he finds out that his ability to really connect intimately or to look her in the eye and say, you know what, you're the only one. He can't say that. The story has not been told about what's going to happen in his life. Except as a pastor counseling with thousands of people and watching thousands of people, I know. And a lot of y'all would sit in this room today having really embraced God's plan for your life, but having had a past, and you would say, hey, let him talk to me through the pain of my life. I can tell you what that's going to result in. There are consequences, painful as they may be. So God says to us, hey, I got a great plan for sex. I want to give it to you. And when you live it out, you can experience God's blessing. Let's bow our heads together. I don't know where you're at today, but I would just encourage you, as you think about your life and your commitments, have you bought into something that's just not true? Are you behaving in a way that's just not honoring to yourself, to other people, to God? This is one of the most challenging areas in our culture today. And I would just ask you to spend a moment before God, just asking him, God, help me to get on your page with this great gift so that I can experience your blessing in my life. Father in heaven, I just want to thank you for entrusting to us something so special, so sacred, so powerful, so wonderful. And I just ask you for forgiveness for the times in my life, for the times in all of our lives, when we've trivialized it in one way or another, misused it. And Father, I just pray that today that you would give us the courage to ask your help in elevating this beautiful gift to its rightful place. And that each person here that's struggling with that would seek encouragement, help, support, biblical guidance, so that they may experience your best for them. For we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.